On January 8th, 2011, Marshawn Lynch went full beast mode on one of the most legendary runs of all time. The 12-man crowd stomped so hard in excitement it generated seismic activity, mimicking an earthquake. In this episode, I'm going to tell you the name of the man that had a run that was a precursor to the famous Beastquake.
Welcome to the Football History Dude Podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. Your host is Arnie Chapman. Football is his passion, and he wants you to come along with him to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board his DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour. Great Scott.
This time we step off a DeLorean, and the date is November 3rd, 1908, and we are in Rainy River, Ontario, which happens to be a border town across International Falls, Minnesota. So yeah, I hope that you brought your passport with you, because we're going to the neighbors up to the north of us. And the reason we're going up there is because our hero was born in Canada, and his name was Bronislaw Nagurski, which is better known to you and me as Bronco Nagurski. And in the last solo episode, we talked about Red Grange that had like a Zeus-like lightning power to him. But this guy, Mr. Bronco, was a thundering, rumbling, hammer-wielding powerhouse of a man. Kind of reminds me of Madden, the game that most of you, many of you, probably played ever since the inception of the game, and you, if you're like me, purchased a new one each year, and they don't have him in there anymore, but back in the day, it used to be him and a lot of times Pat Summerall, and they would have these kind of like one-liners that in between plays, you'd get to hear the famous John Madden one-liners. One of my favorite was like a total spot-on description of this guy. Let's just paint a picture here. You see, in Madden, I got this dude running the ball, you know, pressing the A joy, you know, hit stick. Well, I don't think they had the hit stick back then, actually. This is an earlier rendition. But anyways, you run the ball, smash, gets cracked. And then, you know, jump cut scene to like a huddle or something like that. And then in the middle, John Madden goes, "That guy worked as a bulldozer in the offseason." That right there would be the guy we're going to talk about. Mr. Bronco Nagurski. He was a road grader unlike the league had ever seen before. But we got to kind of go a little bit back. We got to start this thing fresh and we got to go back to his childhood days, his early life. And one of the first things we talk about is, how did this dude get the name Bronco? I thought his name was Bronislaw. And I might be butchering that a little bit, but just in case, because it's an audio for you, I'm going to go ahead and spell it. That's Bronislaw. The reason why he had that name was because his parents, Michael and Amelia, were Ukrainian immigrants and farmers. But then how he got the name? Like what? Bronislaw? Bronco? How does that kind of work out? I don't really know the trueness of this, but a story in the LA Times for his obituary said that basically Bronislaw was changed to Bronco by a teacher that basically was perplexed by his mother's accent, like she couldn't understand it. So somehow this came out Bronco, and I therefore declare, if that's true, this teacher is a national hero because she officially gave this dude what I am calling one of the most perfect football names of all time. I'm Bronco Nagurski. If I say Bronco Nagurski and you had no clue who he was, I mean, you listen to a football podcast, you probably assume that it's a football dude. But if you didn't know that this was a football podcast, you got to imagine yourself thinking the name Bronco Nagurski. And it's like, boom, tough middle linebacker. I'm going to steamroll right over you. I'm going to smash you into oblivion. And that's just what that name rings to me. Maybe it does for you. Maybe it doesn't. But that's what I hear when I got that name Bronco Nagurski in my ears. But a name does not make the man. A man makes the name, and how do you make that man? You give him just some tough stuff and tough love growing up as a child. When he was up there in Canada, you know, in the cold weather up there, things weren't easy for him. He would have to get strong as a lumberman and a farmer. In high school, he would take up wrestling, boxing, baseball, and yep, of course, you know, he had to play some football. But there was kind of a caveat. Apparently, when he was in his senior year, he decided to transfer to, I'm going to butcher this name, but Bemidji High School in hopes of securing a college scholarship. But the problem was, they declared him ineligible due to the transfer, so he just played basketball instead. I'm thinking, Kind of reminds me of Antonio Gates and some of these other freakish athletes that were basically so skilled that they were able to translate a basketball powerhouse into a football and just meld both of them together and be able to say, hey, you know, I'm just like this athletic dude and I'm going to smash you, I'm going to crush you, but I'm also going to be bigger, faster, stronger than everything else in you. So get out my way. And get out of his way they shall. But that's coming up. I mean, the school was called the Bemidji Lumberjacks, which was a perfect fit, you know, a guy being a lumberjack and all. But like I said, he had to play basketball. He couldn't play football there. However, he would go on to play some college ball. And this brings us to one of our first fantasy story, legendary superhero base type occurrences of Bronco Nagurski. You see, recruiting is common practice, as it was back in the day. But the story and the accounts told by that college recruiter that got Mr. Bronco Nagurski to the University of Minnesota that could rival the labors of Hercules himself. There was an account, and it goes as such. Driving by, I saw this powerful young man plowing a field. Then I noticed he had a plow, but no horse. I asked him directions to a certain town, and he pointed in the opposite direction, with the plow in his left hand. So basically, he's all like, dang, I thought I was going to come out here and I was going to see some, you know, talking to grandma back in the kitchen, back down on the farm. And he's all like, hey, where's Mr. Bronco Nagurski? And she's like, oh, he's over there. He's farming and stuff, and he's plowing the field. He's assuming that, well, I mean, you know, probably not thinking there's going to be like a big old tractor and stuff like that, because this is mid-1920s. But he's probably thinking, hey, he's going to have this big old plow thing, and it's going to be behind a horse, and they're going to be pushing it along, and he's just going to be the one directing the horses where to go. But just imagine, he gets out into the field, and he sees this big hulking dude plowing the field by himself. No horse. He's, I ain't need no horses. I got all the horsepower you need right here, baby. So he's baffled. Doesn't know what to do. So what does he do? He just signs him on the spot to play for the University of Minnesota. That's the Gophers, by the way. And he would enter the school in 1926. And from 1927 to 1929, he would proceed to star in four different positions. That would be at end, guard, tackle, and fullback. Mostly tackle on defense and fullback on offense, but he would play those other positions as well. And he would be, in 1929, named the consensus All-American for two different positions at the same time, the same year, fullback and tackle. And his website, which is bronconagurski.com, stated that he was the only person ever to be named to two positions in the same year, which I believe could be in the realm of possibilities because, first of all, I mean, most times players don't star on offense and defense at the same time because it's tough enough alone just to try to be good at one position, let alone both. And then to be like the best at those positions, named consensus All-American in two different positions. I mean, that's just like unfathomable. But so be it, Mr. Bronco Nagurski. That's why we're talking about this man, the myth, the legend. And speaking of legend, what is considered to be his greatest college game came against Wisconsin in 1928. And this would be another quote from his website. And the quote goes as such. Wearing a corset to protect cracked vertebrae, he recovered a Badger fumble deep in their territory and ran the ball six straight times to score the go-ahead touchdown. Later in the same game, he intercepted a pass to seal the victory. So basically what I grab out of that picture was, not only was he the dude that you're going to give the ball to just shove down their throats, he's also the character that's going to be on the defense preventing them from scoring the touchdowns. As in, he's going to recover a ball, he's going to go ahead and play interception guy, and he's basically going to just say, get on my shoulders, I am going to take us over there to the victory. So overall, while he was at Minnesota, the Gophers would have a total record of 18-4-2, and they would win the Big Ten Conference title in 1927. And although he had a dominating college career, he really made his hay when he went to the Professional Football League. And because of this college career, Mr. George Halas and the Chicago Bears were definitely interested in this character. So he would play for them from 1930 to 1937. Well, initially, that is, which we'll get to a little bit later in this episode. In that last episode discussing Red Grange, we talked about Hallis and Sterneman, which were the owners. But basically, they decided that they weren't going to coach anymore. You know, some things went down. Different articles said that they kind of didn't get along anymore. They're like, I'm going to do it my way. And I'm like, no, we're going to do it my way. And all these kind of things. And a bunch of stuff would happen. And Hallis would end up being the only owner of the team down the road. But just stepping it back here a little bit. They put Ralph Jones of Lake Forest Academy in charge as the head coach. And he was the previously an assistant to Bob Zupke, which was the other dude we talked about that coached for Red Grange back in Illinois. And apparently, when he became the head coach, he promised a championship within the next 3 years. So he had to make do on this promise. And he ran a standard T formation. So one of the first things he did was go out and get a bruising rookie by the name of Bronco Nagurski. And at 6'2", 235 pounds, I would say this dude would be a formidable opponent in any era of the NFL. But think about it. We kind of described this a little bit when we talked about Pudge. Like, the size, the stature of these guys, that was much smaller back then. I mean, a little bit bigger probably in the mid-1920s compared to the 1892. But just think about it. This guy was 6'2", 235 pounds. And as a fullback, a guy toting the rock who was going to smash through that line would be going towards some dudes. In fact, the bigger dudes are basically going to be like maybe 200 pounds. Just think about it. It's kind of like when they had William the Perry Fridge suck that ball, take it over the goal line. But this guy was like fast and he was ripped. If you saw the pictures of him, which I'm going to provide some links over there for you, he was like the Rock, like the precursor to the Rock. He was a pretty big, strong looking dude. I mean, he was a monster. One of the videos that I saw on YouTube, they described how, now I'm using quotes here because I don't have any kind of evidence to back this up, but they said that he had still on record today the largest ever ring for a championship. Like, he was fitted and he had the biggest finger that they had to try to, you know, forge this ring. Forge the rings from the three fires of hell. We had to bring it over here to Mr. Bronco Nagurski because it would take the equivalent of 7 men, 5 dwarves, and like 6 elves or however many there were. I don't know. At any rate, they have this one ring and it's going to go on Bronco Nagurski's finger. Something like that. I don't know. Just kind of, sorry, got lost there a little bit. They also said that he had the largest helmet. Like, you know, his head was the biggest of all time. I did not really prove this out or disprove it or anything, but I'm thinking nowadays, you know, Vince Wilfork for the Patriots and then the Texans later on, that was a pretty big boy. I mean, he's not the only one, but there's some pretty big dudes out there. So I'm going to say that's probably just more one of the lores and the legends and that kind of thing. But still, big dude. To go along with this little big dude, this locomotive guy you don't want to get in front of, Red Grange, his teammate, was happy that he only had to face him in practice. And there was a quote that goes as such. When you tackle the Bronc, it's like an electric shock. If you hit him above the ankles, you could get killed. And a few years into his career, the Giants coach, by the name of Steve Owen, was at the time considered a defensive mastermind. And to go along with the same theme here, when he was asked how he planned to stop Bronco, he said, quote, with a shotgun, as he's leaving the dressing room. I'm like, whoa, 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 man, that's like a little extreme there, dude. But it kind of goes along with the theme saying, on the field, you ain't stopping this guy. And a famous moment that kind of sums this up, that every article that I looked at talked about, was a run against the Redskins. And I would say that it rivaled the modern day Beastquake, which we talked about at the beginning of the episode. That was when Marshawn Lynch just basically took the entire Seahawks team and stadium on his back. There was part of it where he would say to Mr. Tracy Porter, get out of here. He just like flung him off with his arm and says, yoink, boom. And he just pushes him out of the way, proceeds to continue. I was telling a story the other day and it's like, I swear, you know, there's 11 players on the team, right? I swear he tried to get tackled by 23 guys, meaning like everybody on the team missed him twice and then a couple guys missed him 3 times. It was just, if you have never seen that run by Marshawn Lynch, then you are doing yourself a disservice to your fandom of the NFL. You need to, well, don't stop this episode. You know, go ahead and continue, finish this episode first, of course. But after this episode, I swear you need to go to YouTube, type in, all you gotta do, Marshawn Lynch Beastquake. You probably could just type in Beastquake because that's how big of a run this was. But at any rate, I think that this play that they keep talking about, Mr. Bronco Nagurski, which I will end up saying no longer is he Bronco Nagurski, he is Bronc Smash, because he decided he would single-handedly smash the entire Redskins defense. So just close your eyes. Try to imagine, I don't know, like a David versus Goliath, Thor versus Loki, I don't know, any big dude that you can think of, Hulk, versus like some small little tiny guy. And that's Bronco. Mr. Bronco Nagurski, that is. He would come charging through that line of scrimmage. He would knock two linebackers in opposite directions. Then he would proceed to stomp on a defensive halfback. And after that, he would crush his safety. Then he bounces off the goalpost. And finally, he would run into the brick wall at Wrigley Field. And he would crack it. They said he cracked the brick wall at Wrigley Field. He ran so hard that as he proceeded to smash his body into that brick wall, it cracked the foundation. Now, that's some pretty epic stuff. But the best part about it was when he went back into the huddle to get that extra point going, legend has it, as he was quoted as such, "That last guy hit me pretty hard." Well, yeah, dude, it's a brick wall, man. You hit that brick wall and you cracked it. Bronco Nagurski, Bronc Smash. That's my favorite new thing to say is Bronc Smash. And you should too. And I think Mr. Charles Richter was a little bit scared of this guy. Charles Richter? You're like, who is that? What are you talking about? Well, I'm saying that he was a scientist. He was. Yeah, he was a scientist. And he was like, we got this guy who can break a brick wall, possibly maybe the first coming of a X-Men, a Marvel, somebody, some superhero with freak powers that we need to be scared of. We need to detect these guys coming. So he would have, now this is all a joke. I know it's not serious, not the reason why he decided to do this, but he's like, I gotta detect when these guys are gonna come. So yes, Charles Richter, he would in 1935 invent the Richter scale, which was a tool that would measure the magnitude of earthquakes. Why I say that, thinking about that game, Marshawn against the Saints, that actually, because of the amount of excitement and just pure joy that the fans had when he made that run against the Saints, when they were jumping up and down in the stadium, it actually registered on the Richter scale with seismic activity that replicated an earthquake. You can go check that on YouTube too. But to get back to my conspiracy, I'm saying my joke is that Bronco cracking that wall had something to do with Mr. Charles Richter inventing the Richter scale. So I guess in a way he kind of, you know, possibly could have saved a lot of lives because seismic activity on the Richter scale helps us detect earthquakes. But yes, I know, dude, you know, it doesn't make sense and I don't see how you can connect those dots. And you know what? It's because I really can't. But it's kind of cool to think. Bronco Nagurski, cracking a brick wall. I do not recommend you doing this at home. You probably should not just find a brick wall and run into the nearest brick wall that you see. However, if you do so and you're able to crack it, send me a picture because that would be pretty cool. But he wasn't just a hard charging, nose diving, Bronco Bull, gonna smash into you kind of runner. He was a stellar blocker. In fact, behind Bronco Nagurski, Beatty Feathers would end up being the first player to ever gain 1,000 yards in one season for the NFL. And that will come in 1934. And Bronco had a quote of his teammate. And when it's such, Beatty had an uncanny knack for following a blocker and ran with his hand on my hip. Together, he gained a lot of yards. Again, history in the making. A lot is revolving around these Chicago Bears back in the day. You know, George Halas, Red Grange, Bronco Nagurski. Now we've got this Beatty Feathers dude. In the previous solo episode, we discussed how Bronco would end up tossing that touchdown to Red Grange against the Portsmouth Spartans in the first ever league title game back in 1932. And then in the next year, in the NFL's first official championship game, he would end up throwing 2 touchdowns. So basically it's like, man, this guy, he tackles. From what I understand, he's like just this fierce, massive tackler, just who you did not want to mess with. He would block for people. He would run the ball with ferocity of which you cannot replicate in the modern day, possibly. He would end up being a guy who would also throw the ball for touchdowns. I mean, like, what else could this guy do? Well, I'm here to tell you that he did a whole lot more than just that stuff. But it wouldn't be in football. You see, it was the Great Depression, so money was hard to come by. And they weren't really paying the players a whole lot back then. So he would turn to wrestling, professional wrestling. He would begin his wrestling career in February of 1933. He won his first match in 2 minutes and 14 seconds. And he would end up wrestling from January to July, and then play football from September to December. So basically he's like, yep, I got my whole year mapped out. I'm good to go. I guess I'll maybe take a break in August, which maybe he was, you know, back on mama's farm out there taking that plow and just pushing it back and down the field. It's like, you know, Walter Payton running on the beach or something. Instead, he's all like, nah, I got this big old plow. I'm going to go ahead and plow the field. That's how I get my workouts in. And there are many videos over there on YouTube if you want to go ahead and see some of his wrestling days. One of the things that was pointed out was in June 1937, he won the title by defeating Dean Detton in Minneapolis. And he would end up wrestling and playing football for the rest of that year. So we got to talk about this. It's said that during a 21-day period, he would play in 5 football games and defend his wrestling title 8 times while traveling from the Midwest to the West Coast, across to the East Coast, and then back to the Midwest. I'm thinking, man, that could rival the barnstorming tour of Red Grange. But, you know, tomato, tomato, potato, potato. But let's just go ahead and just say it at least rivaled it, because that's a lot of physical activity, not to mention the whole traveling thing. I mean, it probably didn't hurt that he was like twice the size of everybody. So even at like, you know, if his little health meters on the game, like at half bars, he's like, huh, I still got this. I'm good to go. Overall, he held the NWA, which was the National Wrestling Alliance, title 5 times from 1937 to 1941. And they said that his favorite holds were the rope butt, the flying tackle, and the body slam. Don't ask me what the rope butt is. I have no clue. Kind of reminds me of Yokozuna. You know, he used to do that, what they called, I think they called like the bonsai drop or something like that. It was like one of my favorite moves in the WCW NWO revenge game. I think it was in, I think that's what it was. But anyway, he would do that like bonsai, and he would basically get on the turnbuckle and he would jump down and he'd just smash that dude with his big old butt. I don't know if that's the same thing, but probably not. I don't know. At any rate, he would initially retire in 1942, but then he would resume wrestling again in 1946 and finally retire in 1958, which would go to the beginning of the episode, and we found out he was born in 1908. So this guy would wrestle until he was 50 years old. I guess now that we're in 1958, let's go back on that DeLorean, tell Mr. Dr. Emmett Brown to crank that little flux capacitor thing up, you know, throw some more garbage in the disposal, and let's head on back to 1943, because we need to talk about what was considered one of the greatest comeback stories of all time. I mean, this year, as we stand, 2018, there's going to be a lot of big-name stars that are going to be on their comeback trails. Just to name a few, we've got Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, David Johnson. Let's go ahead and let the football history dude keep David Johnson in his home league instead of Le'Veon Bell. And, you know, I'm going to go ahead and break my wrist the first game, but, you know, whatever. Let's make this year the comeback. Just like Mr. Bronco Nagurski did back in 1943. There would end up being a book that came out by Mr. Jim Dent called The Monster of the Midway. And it was chronicled as the greatest comeback ever. Now, again, there's too many out there to really discuss, but this was considered definitely one of the better ones of all time. You see, he was retired for 6 years from the NFL, you know, to do his wrestling career. But this was the time of World War II, and the Bears players, many of them were drafted to go to the war and support this country. In fact, Mr. George Halas was at war himself, and he told the Bears that they should re-sign Bronco Nagurski. However, this time he was a little bit older, so he was going to play tackle. But just think about it. The guy went from fullback and linebacker to defensive tackle, offensive tackle now. I mean, just like, hey, I'll do whatever he got me to do to help out the team. I'm just happy to be here, guys. He was 35 years old. Like I said, he had a 6-year hiatus from the game. Name me one person that you can think of that can go out of the league for 6 years and then come on back and still dominate. Well, I mean, anybody besides the name Barry Sanders, of course, because that guy right now could still be on the Lions and probably run for 1,000 yards or more. But I digress. We're going to talk about anybody else that you can besides name Calvin Johnson too. Let's carry on. Mr. Terrell Owens, from what I understand, is trying to be the first player ever to be like an active player that's also in the Professional Football Hall of Fame. I don't know if he's going to get there, but it would be kind of cool, I got to say. Like we talked about in the last episode of one of the listeners, that'd be neat to see a guy that old and that good of shape still getting it done on the gridiron. But we're talking about Bronco Nagurski here. And like I said, he would be the offensive tackle, so he would pave the way for the runners. But late in the season, the Bears players kept getting drafted, so they would turn to him to become that runner. He would, near the end of the season, go back to his old position of fullback, and he would be a man on a mission. He would bring back what I call Bronx Smash. He would end up doing this Bronx Smash in a game that the Bears had to win to get into the playoffs. They said, hey, we're going to ride you to get to that championship. So he just kept plunging into the line. He would end up getting the tying and finally the winning touchdown, which would put the Bears into the championship game where they would face the Redskins. And he would end up ending his career in this game, but not before he scored a touchdown that let the Bears stay ahead in this championship game and would give them the victory. So as you can see, he had a long career that spanned football and wrestling, where at the time, wrestling was a major sport. So he was able to Bo Jackson style it into two major sports at the same time, and he would be very successful, essentially basically winning championships in both. And because of his dominating performance on the field, Bronco Nagurski would end up becoming a charter member, Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1963. And there was a quote from Mr. Ernie Nevers, the guy that we talked about that had 40 points all by himself in that one game and still holds a record. And he had a quote that goes as such, "Tackling Bronco is like tackling a freight train going downhill." Basically saying, hey, that dude's going, either you step out the way or you're going to get run over because you are not stopping that thing. And to get kind of a glimpse, like I said earlier, we're talking about the whole precursor to Beast Quake and Charles Richter inventing that scale because he wanted to try to make sure if there's any kind of, you know, superheroes out there that we got to be aware of. They would end up erecting the Bronco Nagurski Museum in International Falls, Minnesota, where he spent his later days, because they had to honor this individual who gave all he had to the game of football and would even come back at the ripe old age of 35 years to have what they said one of the greatest comebacks of all time. And if you end up going to that museum, go ahead and snap a shot a couple photos and send it on over to me, because that'd be definitely cool to put on my website. You can head on over to thefootballhistorydude.com/episode7, where you can get a breakdown of the show, and I'll include the links that I talk about here in this episode. And to go along with last week's episode, if you want to be featured on an upcoming episode of the Football History Dude, where you share your favorite football moment, head on over to myfootballmoment.com, and I give you two different options for you to record your story. But let's get back to the episode. You see, the United States Postal Service ended up issuing a stamp collection in August 8th of 2003, which they called Early Football Heroes. And it's kind of cool because basically it's four of the main dudes that we talked about so far in this podcast. The four guys were Walter Camp, Red Grange, Ernie Nevers, and yes, Bronco Nagurski. So there you have it. The United States Postal Service recognized that these were four of the main dudes from the early days of football lore. and Bronco Nagurski was one of the main dudes that was able to help put the NFL on the map, where it has grown into the massive conglomeration that it is today. So you and I get to enjoy each week watching our favorite football team. But Mr. Bronco Nagurski would end up passing away on January 7th, 1990. But in February 1944, a Minneapolis native, Lieutenant Fred E. Stone, requested permission from Bronco Nagurski to use his name and image on the nose of their new B-24 bomber. They were able to successfully accomplish this request, and the plane was sent to England to prepare for battle. This plane's first bombing mission was on April 9, 1944. Bronco Nagurski was a bull on the field, and his style of play may have given the gusto to the B-24 crew in 1944 to help America win World War II. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Football History Dude and were able to gain some knowledge nuggets of one of the best power backs to ever grace the gridiron. In the upcoming episode, we get to take a closer look at the guy that Bronco helped record the first 1,000-yard rushing season in the history of the NFL.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Football History Dude. To make sure you're the first to get the next episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice and head on over to thefootballhistorydude.com for the show notes and more information on the history of the NFL. And remember, dudes, where we're going, we don't need roads.